will be elected. That, to me, is a subject to a gerrymander test. Now they fixed it in the Senate committee. It's better. But I think the whole area is kind of dangerous. But I will say that that's not the language they passed. They actually fixed that language.
And we heard testimony from the Independence Party. Mr. McLuhan talked about the district in St. Paul and the district in Minneapolis with their candidates. They were looking at the Hmong community, for instance. Do you have any thoughts or perspective on that in terms of the competitiveness within those districts that he mentioned, the Saitau race versus, you know, the concentration of the Hmong and the minority issue there? Any comments?
Well, it depends. If competitiveness, Mr. Chair, is dealt with on a party level or on, you know, a Voting Rights Act type level where we're trying to build majority-minority districts, certainly in St. Paul, when we get the data in a couple of weeks, I think you'll be able to draw a Hmong majority-minority district. You'll probably be able to draw a stronger Hispanic majority-minority district. And probably stronger and bigger and larger, maybe a Senate district, a black majority-minority district in Minneapolis. But until we get the data, I really don't know. That's from more of a majority-minority aspect. In terms of the party, I just don't know how we're going to be able to tell or decide.
Representative Gray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know time is short here. People want to go home, so I'll try and be brief. First of all, you had talked about the criteria and how we shouldn't put that in a bill, that we should have a resolution instead. What do you think the timetable should be? How soon do you think that resolution should be available in order for us to do our work and accomplish a redistricting plan on a timely basis?
Well, Mr. Walsh.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, I think as soon as you can. But I think some of the elements that you can do before you reach that, I think you've been doing. Testimony from the public is extremely valuable before you put criteria together. We heard a lot of it today. The testimony out state has been very valuable. You can get the data. There's 10 years ago, I believe the criteria was passed both in the House and the Senate, very close to when the bills were passed. You can do better than that, I think. But I think the most important thing is to take the appropriate amount of testimony before you do it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
So you're suggesting then that there's no big rush for that, that we should continue to take testimony for an extended period of time, for a month or two, or no comment on how long then?
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, I think you've done a better job in the House taking testimony than they did in the Senate and have more work done. No particular hurry, although you are running out of time, and I think you can do better, like I said, than you did in 1991 when it was passed immediately before the bill. Here we are, March 20th. You're going to run out of time, so sometime in mid-April, you know, the end of April, you should be on criteria, absolutely.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gray.
You also talked about the deviation being relatively low. I don't know if you specified a specific number for the deviation, so if you have one, I'd like to hear that. But beyond that, you also mentioned the fact that, you know, the Senate Democrats seem to place a high value on maintaining political subdivisions. And I guess the comment I would make is based upon the hearings that we've had, virtually every place that I've been to, the testimony has been from those residents that they value the maintaining political subdivisions as well. And so, you know, personally, as a Democrat, I really don't care. I mean, if it's one or 15. But I do listen to the folks who testify, and the folks who've testified have suggested that a broader deviation to encompass political subdivisions would be useful. So listening to that testimony, would you suggest still that we should ignore the testimony of those folks that have come before us and still maintain this this priority for a low deviation?
Well, Representative Gray, before he answers, I will just point out that in Brainerd area, we heard that there was the mayor who said, you know, they had no problem putting Brainerd and Baxter together. Same district.
Mr. Chairman.
Splitting the district.
Right, but there was also testimony from other folks in Wilmer and other places, and I believe Brainerd as well, where they were suggesting that political subdivisions were important to them, more important than maintaining low deviation.
Right. I'll let Mr. Walsh answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, well, first of all, in terms of a number, I don't know that it's necessary to put a number into your criteria. The principle should be as low as possible. You know, you've got the 9.9% out there. My only warning, I guess, is that if somebody else has a plan that's lower in deviation than yours, the court's going to look at that very, very, very seriously, especially if it meets the other criteria. In terms of the testimony and splitting cities and counties, I sat through the Senate hearings on their criteria, and they really focused a lot. Almost every argument was, don't split cities, don't split counties. And I think it's a high principle. I think it should be taken into consideration, but it's not the most important principle. And I also think that, like I said, we can do a plan in Minnesota at a low deviation that also splits the least amount of cities and counties and takes that testimony, like you mentioned, into account. And again, like I said before, you're going to split cities and you're going to split counties. It's going to happen. So it's just it's all you're doing is minimizing how many counties and cities you split. Both can be accomplished, especially with the Neville Amendment, which I thought was something you should consider in this committee, is an overall deviation of plus or minus 4, but a mean deviation across the state, all districts, of less than 1 or some low number. That way, the tough case of, you know, we got to keep this city together, this neighborhood together, really want to do that, and the courts will allow that. The courts will allow the state, if you have a good reason to do it. You can do that in the tough cases, but overall, really push for a one-person, one-vote principle.
Representative Gray?
Mr. Chairman, you also talked about potentially having some criteria that would allow for potential future growth in districts. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, we have trouble here in this body agreeing on whether the forecast is what the administration says the forecast ought to be, or the numbers, projected numbers, or what the projected numbers ought to be. Do you think that we could agree upon what those projections would be, or would you suggest that that number just be given us by the state demographer's office and we should accept that as given? Would it be subject to any political manipulation in your mind?
Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, certainly it can be subject to political interpretation, but I think it's something you should explore, and I think the state demographer can tell you areas that he knows or expects are going to grow based on science, basically, and especially on housing starts and things like that, and areas that aren't going to grow. And remember, it's a principle. It's a principle that you'll use to guide your redistricting map. You won't achieve it 100%. Some districts will break that principle as because other principles will supersede it. But I think it's possible to work something out, absolutely.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Rosen, agree.
Two more questions. I'm done. First of all, you had talked about a reasonable mean deviation. And I guess what do you define that to be? Are you saying that should be 1%, the mean deviation that we use? Do you have a number in mind?
Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, the amendment in the Senate was a 1% mean, under 1%. At the Republican Party, we do have the capability to draw maps. We have the software, and so we've done some map drawing. I think 1% is a good threshold. You can draw maps at 1% and really respect city and county boundaries. So, again, that's something you can work out, but 1% is a good number.
Okay. Final question, Mr. Chair. As I said, I'm asking everyone about this this possibility of an independent redistricting commission that was talked about last week, and it's kind of nice to actually listen to what folks say, and they seem to think it's a great idea. It's an ideal, apparently, that's been proposed before in this body. Does the Republican Party have a perspective on that? Do you think it would be a good idea?
Mr. Walsh?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gray, the party hasn't taken a specific position on that. I would just say that, again, in the Minnesota Constitution, Article 4 is legislative department, and Section 2 says apportionment of members, and that is a pretty strong indication that the Constitution wanted the legislature to do the redistricting. So it sounds good, but I think the legislature should do the plan.
Mr. Walsh, based on the questions that you had just answered from Representative Gray, so you're saying if you could, because I asked this earlier, but if you could draw maps with plus or minus 1%, I think you said too, splitting less political subdivisions than are split now, I mean, that's a good thing.
Mr. Chair, clearly. And then, in like I said before, the courts have indicated that over and over and over. They in the line of court cases that deal with congressional redistricting, to get down to that close as practicable, the courts consistently chose plans with smaller deviations. Even if a district court threw out a state court plan or a state legislature plan that was, say, 4% and picked one that was 0.284, the Supreme Court came in and said, well, you did the right thing throwing the state plan out, but we want you to pick the one that's even smaller, 0.13. So the smaller the better. You're gonna do better in court. And again, the technology allows you to respect the city boundaries.
Representative Nawai.
I just wanted to make a note, Mr. Chair, that 10 years ago, one body of the legislature actually passed their principles 1 month after they received the data from the Census Bureau, and the second body passed it almost 2 months after receiving the data from the Census Bureau, and we of course haven't received it yet, and so I think at least by historical standards we would certainly be conforming to historic standards if we didn't pass anything for a while still.
Thank you. Mr. Walsh, before you go, just to follow up on the congressional testimony, since you brought this up, can you expand on that, the communities of interest that might lie within the 4th and the 5th congressional districts? I mean, because you suggested perhaps combining the core cities. I mean, are you saying that certain neighborhoods in St. Paul might have more in common with certain neighborhoods in Minneapolis versus an existing suburb that's in the 4th congressional versus St. Paul, for instance?
Sure, Mr. Chair. In my experience, I just finished, I was the campaign manager for the Republican candidate in the 4th Congressional District. It was a very difficult district to run a campaign in, and I always thought a very difficult district to represent if we had won, because you've got suburbs like North Oaks, and which you've got to figure out how to represent equally with Frogtown neighborhood, equally with the Hmong community, a large Hmong community in the city of St. Paul, Sunfish Lake at the south end, and then some other suburbs like North St. Paul and Maplewood and South St. Paul, West St. Paul in there. Core urban districts or core urban cities have like issues in Congress, and suburban districts have like issues that they need a congressperson fighting for in Congress. And rural Minnesota has farm issues, economic development issues they need fighting in Congress. So they're like macro communities of interest, and I think it's time in Minnesota we really take a serious look at building a core Minneapolis district. If you don't do that, then the alternative is take the 4th district as it is now, 60% suburban, 40% city of St. Paul, and you're going to have to grow it. It's underpopulated. So you're going to have to grow it and expand it out into that ring of suburbs around it. And you're going to do is exacerbate the problem that currently exists with the diversity of that district, and the same thing in Minneapolis. And you're going to end up with if you don't combine the two cities into a congressional district, it's going to be difficult to draw a congressional map that is compact and that ends up with the right mix of representation in Washington.
Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would, certainly the compactness might be valid, but when you look at representing the vast majority of African Americans in the state, the vast majority of Latinos, the vast majority of Southeast Asian, of Hmong, of Vietnamese, of wealthy folks around the lake, wealthy folks along the river, poor folks in my district, I would suggest we have as much diversity in trying to represent certainly the cultural differences between St. Paul and Minneapolis, which are immense. I mean, we've had a rivalry between St. Paul and Minneapolis for as long as I've been alive. And certainly I think when you take those different cultures, those different ethnic groups, those different values, income ranges into consideration, I would suggest that it's as diverse and difficult a district that you would map out as the ones that you're talking about now.
Oh, Mr. Chair, well, I mean, that's up for debate. I mean, that's the debate we're going to have, absolutely.
Just to follow up on that as well, I mean, you could also argue, I suppose, that Duluth has not as much in common with Anoka County, with the 8th District, Congressional District coming down, versus going across the northern half of the state to East Grand Forks. I mean, is it any comments on that? Is that more of a compact rural district as opposed to Anoka suburban area combined with the range?
Again, I think, Mr. Chair, the demographer in his presentation had the state split into three areas, and that's the urban core, the suburban 11-county ring, and outstate Minnesota. And, you know, an earlier speaker kept saying that Duluth has nothing in common with the people in Wyoming and how difficult it was to organize and to get those people together. And I think that speaks volumes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman,
yep.
I have a question for you, not for the testifier,
sure.
if it would be in order at this point.
Sure. If I may, Representative Gray, I just want to make sure, are there any other parties who wish to testify? Because we had invited a few other folks. I know we had invited the Libertarian Party, Minnesota Grassroots Party, the Constitutional Party, Progressive Minnesota, and the Natural Law Party of Minnesota. And some of those folks thought they might be able to come, but okay, just want to make sure. So I'm sorry, Representative Gray.
Mr. Chairman, I know Representative Abrams had talked about having fashioned a bill in the past dealing with an independent commission to do redistricting that he suggested had never seen the light of day in committee. I'm wondering, would this committee, with the time that we have available, be willing, if a bill like that were presented, to at least hear that bill in this committee?
Well, I suppose it's certainly possible. I will say this. I mean, as you can expect, when the numbers arrive, potentially within the next 2 weeks, there's going to be a lot on our table. I mean, because we're going to have the standards bill, which we'll have to do in the very near future here on criteria, as well as the actual putting the maps together. It's all a matter of timing in terms of how much time. If the goal is to pass a bill this year, yet in May, which
that's
I think
certainly my goal, Mr. Chair.
And the Senate would, I think, agree, and the governor's office would like to see that, and the commission, I think, would like to see it from the governor's office. So, I mean, it's hard to say, yes, that's what we should do. That may further complicate it. I think the comments from the parties, they hadn't given it too much more thought other than to think it's the legislator's duty and obligation to do this right now. So it's hard for me to just say, no, we won't do it, or yes, we will.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I would just say that I hear the testimony slightly different in that many of them were concerned about the details of what the bill would include in terms of the appointment of the commission and how it would function in relationship to the legislature. You're right, many have not explored that ideal and probably would not unless there was a specific bill on the table. I don't know if one would be forthcoming. I was just wondering whether you would be willing to entertain such a bill.
And if it follows the same path as it did in 1980 when as the League of Women Voters testified, it would be a constitutional amendment to be put on the, you know, on the ballot as well. Any other comments? If not, thank you for coming, and it's adjourned.
Michelle.